Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today, our guest is James Holzhauer, a Las Vegas sports bettor who successfully redefined the way to play Jeopardy. James, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hi, thanks for having me.
To start off, let's talk about the end result of your Jeopardy run and how you got there, how many shows you're on, and how much did you win, that kind of stuff.
Sure. So I won 32 episodes, and my final money total was something like $2.46 million. And I have now own the 16 highest single game scores in the show's history.
Impressive. Very impressive. My claim to fame was I got on the show, which is an impressive thing in and of itself, but it's nowhere near what winning the stretch.
Well, but you tried many times to get on the show, right?
Yeah, so they have an online test. There's basically, you know, a multiple-step process to get on. You have to take the online test and get a passing score on that, and then they enter you into a lottery with all the other people who pass the test. And if you win that lottery, you get to go to an in-person audition, and they take something like, I don't know, 10 to 20% of the people who go to the in-person audition to get on the show, and... You know, the producers won't really tell you what criteria they have there. They make you take another test, a written test when you get there, just in case you cheated on the online one somehow. And then you play like kind of a mock game. And, you know, I mean, I think they're looking for people who would be good on television and keep the game moving, things like that. But nobody is really clear on exactly how the process goes. So I started taking the test in 2006, I think is the first year they offered it. And this was my second in-person audition. And they tell you you have to wait up to 18 months for your call, but I ended up waiting about 22. So it was took a while.
Well, so you went twice for the in-person.
That's correct.
Very good, which is amazing. People would think, well, this guy would ace the test right away.
And, well, that's another question. If you take the online, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but if you take the online test, does someone who scores, let's say, 95 have more of a chance than someone who scores 89?
You know, they won't tell you. I have some friends who are really high-level trivia players, and they haven't gotten on the show. They've been trying even longer than I have, and they seem to think there might be a bias against putting the really smart people on there. I don't know. I can't really say. I mean, I will say, like, if I were making a TV show, my first important thing would be, hey, is this person good for television? And then I would think about, hey, can this person crush the show secondarily?
Although crushing the show, I think, is good for them. Right? I mean, it really improves their ratings.
Well, yes, but I'm not involved in TV production. I mean, it probably costs them at least, you know, $1.5 million extra dollars to put me on instead of normal contestants. So, you know, are they going to get that back? Probably. I don't know. It's a cash cow.
Well, they're going to keep inviting you back to Tournament of Champions for another couple, I don't know how many times, but they'll find a way to invite you back because because you became very popular. Now, you broke the record of Ken Jennings, or in some ways you broke his record. In some way, he still has the cash total of 50,000 or so ahead of you, and the number of victories ahead of you in terms of highest scores and things. You beat him, but he did this 15 years ago. This is kind of like LeBron James and Michael Jordan going one-on-one today. And today, James would crush Michael Jordan because he's, I don't know, mid-50s. I don't know how Michael is, something like that. And all NBA players would crush Michael Jordan today.
Wow, I don't think you can say that at all. You're going to get a lot of angry mail. Oh, you mean if he's playing today in his 50s?
As a 55-year-old man.
I see what
you mean. You know, in his era, he was, you know, there are people who argue he's the best of all time, and whether he's the best or in the top three is people will debate. But there's no
Although the game of basketball has changed, right?
It's okay.
So it's a different game today than it was.
Well, with today's rules, he could have done well, too.
No, I'm talking about the number of threes people shoot today and the percentage of their...
So, but the question is against Ken Jennings. You're in your prime, and he's 15 years past his Jeopardy prime. How can they handicap it to make it interesting television? or do you have any idea?
Well, the first thing I'll say is it's a felony crime to design a game show to advantage one contestant over another. So, you know, if Jeopardy has a face-off between me and Ken and possibly Brad Rutter, the all-time money winner on the show, they're not going to play around with anything. They're just going to play a straight game and, you know, see who's the best. I will say I've seen some people, even Ken, talk about this age gap thing as a potential factor in a showdown. And, you know, Ken was just on Jeopardy this February and he was crushing it. You know, he barely lost to Brad again, but he did great every time he played. And he was beating those young kids to the buzzer and getting his stuff right. So I don't really think there's that big of a difference at all.
I'm assuming that you guys are going to be on together some point in the near future.
Well, they haven't confirmed anything, but, you know, certainly many, many people are talking about the possibility of doing this. And, you know, I think that Jeopardy has their ears to the ground on this.
Yeah, it'd be a huge cash cow for them, I would think. I mean, everybody would want to see that.
Now, given that you're going to be on 2 or 5 or 10 more times, and that it's a cash cow when you do get on, is it positive EV for you to spend your time between now and then continuing to increase your knowledge or to go out and get a job?
You know, I mean, if my goal were simply to maximize my bank balance, I think I'd be making decisions differently than I am right now. There's some people offering what I think are obscene amounts of money for me to do things that I don't know that I'd be particularly good at, like giving a keynote speech or, you know, being a pitch man for some kind of product. But, you know, if those things don't better my life, then what does the money really matter right now? Playing Jeopardy is a thing I enjoy, you know, getting to compete against the best in the world and the tournaments that they're going to run. That's, you know, an exciting thing. And the thrill of competition will drive me there for sure. And the money is a nice cherry on top, of course. But yeah, I mean, it's tricky. You know, my whole gambling career is like kind of trying to maximize the dollar return on stuff. But that's, I don't know, it's just not my life goal at this moment.
What would you like to be doing?
Oh, that's the big question right now. There's so many doors that are opening for me right now. I'll tell you what I'm doing. There's a National Bridge tournament in town right now. You know, I've always wanted to be able to play bridge with some really high-level players, and all of a sudden they're lining up to play with me. It's a kind of a crazy thing.
So normally you have to pay to be with this high-level people. Are they willing to pay to play with you?
I have not had the cheek to start charging them yet, but, you know, it's kind of a nice arrangement for both of us, I think. But, yeah, there's a very nice former bridge pro in town. You know, he's multiple time world champion. He's kind of retired from the pro game because he doesn't like the grind of it, and he's, you know, just playing with me out of the goodness of his heart. It's a really nice gesture on his part.
I thought I read you were interested in doing stats work for like a professional team. Is that something you're interested in?
Yeah, so that, 10, 15 years ago, that was the end goal. And I'm not sure what the end goal is now. You know, I'm married. I have a kid. I have to consider the needs of the family. My wife is from Seattle. She's envisioned herself ending up back there. Now that we, you know, kind of don't need to worry about money right now, maybe I can hang up the sports betting gig and we could move there. But it's funny, you know, that just the world of being famous. I made some offhand remark about how, you know, it might be nice to work for a baseball team and it might be nice to go move to Seattle. And the Mariners reached out to me after they heard this. So who knows where this is going to go with them. But and then, you know, all the Seattle area sports radio stations wanted to talk to me about this. It's just crazy how things spread.
Yeah, no, and figuring out, as you said, what it is you really want to do, what's going to make you happy, you know?
Yeah, and $2.5 million is, I mean, that's more than Richard makes in a week, but it's you're 34 and $2.5 million is not going to last you forever, so you got to do something, although there'll be more coming in from Jeopardy and commercial opportunities if you want this.
Yeah, you know, my wife has argued for years that we've socked away enough gambling winnings that we don't really need to worry about getting more, but I kind of have this idea, you know, my whole adult life I've been gambling and I've seen so many things that, you know, made me a bunch of money in a short term and then they just completely dried up. You know, it's online poker shuts down or sports books realize, hey, James is crushing us on this one prop, we're going to stop offering that prop, or we're going to tighten up the lines so he can't do this anymore. You know, I've had to basically changed the focus of my sports gambling thing 6 different times now, and who knows how long my current setup is going to work for me. The idea, okay, you know, 5 years from now I'm not going to be able to do this, I need to get the money now and get out.
You mentioned trivia. Do you do any of these like pub trivia type things? Or my brother is very much into this, and it's very big around the world.
Yeah, that's another thing I did a lot more when I was younger. You know, my wife and I used to go to trivia nights all the time together. We just play as a two-person team, but we don't really want to leave the kid with a babysitter just to go do that now. So it's kind of an occasional rare treat. I'll go out with my friends and play this.
Yeah. And how did you mentioned you've been gambling 15 years. How did that start?
So when I was in college, we had a bridge club there that I was the president of. And then, you know, we were meeting up to play bridge, and like all teenagers, we kind of got the idea like, hey, bridge is kind of slow. Why don't we play some poker instead? And we just kind of changed this bridge club to a poker club all of a sudden. And then online poker was really taking off around this point. It was about 2002. You know, I got the idea, hey, I can make some beer money off of this. And then when the moneymaker thing happened, it just completely took off. And that, you know, kind of transitioned from beer money to, hey, I can actually make real money doing this. I built a website with poker strategy that would earn referral fees from the online card rooms. And, you know, this was only lasted for kind of a couple of years, but it was nice because it gave me the initial seed money to go sports bet with. You know, I mean, you can have the best sports betting system in the world, and if you don't have like a five-figure bankroll to start, you can't do anything with it.
Did you start with like the online bonuses the way Spanky did?
I mean, you know, those were certainly a nice benefit. That was not the prime driver of my poker, although I would, you know, they were offering ridiculous bonuses at online casinos back then to let you play blackjack, and I would do that.
No, I meant sports.
There were, you know, a few here and there, but the kind of places that offered these ridiculous bonuses also got really bad reviews online. I was kind of worried about them running away with my money.
And do you find it harder now to get down now that you're famous? I mean, are you able to? I would think, well, everybody has trouble getting down, right?
Yeah. So. Well, I've been doing very little work in the past few months, so I can't say if there's been a big effect yet. But I will say, I mean, all the sportsbook managers in town knew my name already. I don't think that they're, you know, if anything, I think it might be good publicity for them to take bets from me now, better than it was before. I know Derek Stevens has reached out to get me to go bet at his new place. You know, I haven't had the time to open up an account there yet, but come football season, I'm sure I will. Oh, the
Derek's in charge of the D and the Golden Gate. Yeah. Is that what it is?
And the new
yeah, so Circa is the new
Circa,
app, and is going to be the new allegedly state of the art sports book there. The concept pictures certainly look amazing. I'm going to be playing the Super Contest this year for the first time. Also, Jay Cornegay reached out and said, "Hey, we'll buy you into this." And I said, "All right, sounds like a free roll to me." You know,
$5,000 entry.
Just the 1500, I think. I haven't actually gone and bought in yet. I'm under the impression it's the small one, though.
But good. So in that one, you bet against the spread.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's be real.
But
it's kind of a coin flipping contest, and you know, I expect to finish slightly ahead of the middle of the pack. But you know, whatever. It's not a big deal.
Well, I don't know. When you live in Henderson, you have to go up to the. It's not an easy casino to get to.
They're letting you submit your pickets on the app now.
Ah, that is an easy casino to get to.
Yeah, that helps.
Now, on the final night of your Jeopardy run, you were beaten by a very impressive player named Emma. It appeared as though she was using very similar strategy to what you were using. She would start near the bottom of the board. She would jump around. And you both played excellently. Had your finger been a tenth of a second faster on one of them, you might still be going.
Yeah.
But she was using a very similar strategy. But she could not have seen you because she had not heard of you until she showed up at the studio that day. Would you guess the Jeopardy producer says, this guy is really hot shit. If you want to beat him, you got to do it this way. Or is just something she figured out by herself? What would you speculate on?
Well, I'm again going to mention that it's a felony to advantage any contestant in a game show. You know, they had these huge scandals in the 50s. You might remember the quiz show movie. And so they just, you know, any even appearance of impropriety is swiftly punished, I think. They have a lawyer on set, actually, who had a lot of talks with me about how I can't just push invisible chips into the center to make a bet because that is not a legal commitment to do anything. But, you know, there's a lot of oversight. They would certainly never do anything like that. Now, you know, I don't know Emma, but she wrote a thesis. I think it was a master's thesis on Jeopardy and, like, uh-huh. you know, mining the data from the fan-created archive to know about patterns of how the game board works. So, you know, this is not an average Jeopardy contestant. It's a really, really fucking good one that they, you know, just happened to throw up in there against me. Again, not on purpose, you know, it just worked out this way. And I'm sure that she had prepared her strategy well in advance.
I haven't watched the show since you were on. Has it changed the meta? Are all players now betting a lot on Daily Doubles? And
so all the episodes for this season wrap taping, I think it was like April 6th was the last tape day of the year, and I started on April 4th, so there shouldn't really have been any effect this year. Now, when the new season starts in September, then you'll get a wave of people who did see all my games, and maybe they'll adjust, maybe they won't, I don't know. I'm personally hoping they do, because I think it makes for a more exciting product.
Well, also, I was really happy to see an interview with you where they ask why you were betting so much on the Daily Doubles, and you sort of, in layman's terms, explained positive expectation and why wouldn't you bet a lot when you have such a massive edge. But yeah. People have a hard time understanding that concept.
Sure. So it's kind of a tricky math problem in the middle of a game, because you have to think about, you know, how do I maximize my chances of winning? And, you know, sometimes that can mean to bet big in a spot where it wouldn't appear so. But you're kind of, I likened it to a football game. You know, teams are afraid to, when they're playing with a lead in the fourth quarter, they're afraid to go for a first down pass that looks risky. But, you know, if they want to trust their defense, you know, run it three times and then punt. But, you know, that to me is kind of like going into Final Jeopardy with a small lead. You're leaving it up to chance, really, when you could have salted this game away earlier. And then, you know, when you get towards the end of Double Jeopardy, if I hit a Daily Double really late, it would, you know, I would have the game on lockdown, and it's just a kind of straight math problem. They're offering me even money on something I'm going to get right 80-90% of the time. You know, I want as much of that money as I can get. Final Jeopardy was the same way. You know, it's even money proposition, I have an enormous edge. Why not press it?
Yeah.
As long as you didn't bet enough that if you got it wrong, you could lose.
Exactly.
Which made your final bet on the last day, when you bet a small amount, but it was just enough to guarantee you were going to get second place if the third place guy went all in, was so you would get $2,000 prize instead of $1,000 after you're at 2.46, you know, is there a difference between 2.461 and 2.462? It's easy to say, well, they sound the same, but it's $1,000.
No, that $1,000, I mean, you know, it's not, I'm going to spend that $1,000 for sure, but no, that wasn't it. The thing was, you know, I was like 95% sure Emma was going to bet enough of her stack to cover me if I had gone all in. And so, you know, you figure I can't win if she gets it right. And now if she gets it wrong, now what happens? And I can't let third place pass me in that spot. So the goal was just to win the game, of course. But, you know, I think this maximized my chances of winning. Now, if Emma had thought to bet zero because she went, you know, third level thinking on me, then okay, you know, she wins.
All right. We have a lot more questions for Jeopardy James Holzhauer. We're going to do some commercials, and we'll be right back with James. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In August, the prizes are logo merchandise advertising the South Point or the South Point 400 NASCAR race. Each week, Monday through Thursday, earn 1,300 points on any machine and get the prize. August 5th to 8th is T-shirt and hat. August 12th to 15th is a polo shirt. August 19th, 22 is a three-quarter zip polo. August 26th to 29 is a duffel bag. Whether you're into the logo merchandise or not, if you earn and collect all four items, you will receive $100 free play that can be collected on Saturday, August 31st. The next 10-week semester of free video poker classes will begin the day after Labor Day, Tuesday, September 3rd, starting at noon. There are flyers available at the club booth with the class schedule, which may also be found at bobdancer.com/seminars. All adults are welcome to attend. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Super Triple Play Jackpots, and it's a game for those who wish to gamble. It requires 7 coins per line. The first extra coins bumps up all the values for the 4 of a kinds. The second extra coin provides you with a wheel spin whenever you end up with a 4 of a kind. Since these quads only come about every 420 hands or so, it's a heaven or hell experience. If you don't get many quads today, you will not like this game. If you do, you will. We're returning to our guest, James Holzhauer. When you were talking about there are laws about favoring one casino, one player over the other in these games, there were rumors that they were letting the players practice with the buzzer more near the end of your run than they were before, simply because buzzer skills is a part of successful strategy. Is that true?
I don't know where these rumors originated. It's certainly not true. You know, I sat through all these practice sessions. They were all the same length. I will say, like, Emma was clearly awesome on the buzzer in her practice session right from the bat, and I had my eye on her as an opponent to be worried about that day.
Now, you knew you were going to lose someday. You might have hoped it was going to be in 2021, I don't know, rather than, but you knew it was coming. Did you practice how to go out with style so that when it did come, it was gracious and you'll be well remembered? Because it clearly was.
Yeah, I will say I kind of had the idea to give a high five to the contestant who beat me as soon as it became clear that I was going to be a remembered contestant on the show. But, you know, I also kind of just felt it in the moment. And it was if you've seen the video, it was a fairly awkward high five because she thought I was going for a handshake. I mean, who high fives someone on Jeopardy?
Well, same kind of guy who push all his chips in. That's who. To gain your knowledge, back when I was reading everything I could. It was not a successful strategy. I heard that your strategy was to read children's books, which strikes me as, why didn't I think of that? Now, what was that all about?
Well, you know, I mean, the process of preparing for Jeopardy has presumably changed a lot since you were on. You said in 89 or something like
89.
That.
89.
Yeah, so, you know, you're dealing with the pre-internet age. Especially now, since the mid-2000s, the Jeopardy archive, you know, every aspiring Jeopardy contestant knows about the existence of this archive. And, you know, depending on your willingness to commit to studying it and your data mining skills, things like that, they have different levels of knowledge of exactly which topics are recurring. And, you know, I mean, a lot of them are fairly straightforward. You know, if you ever watch the show regularly, that's things like geography and presidents and Shakespeare, chemistry, the periodic table, these things all recur. But you can pick up other patterns too if you're really delving into stuff and you think, like, okay, like, no matter how well-run your knowledge base is, there's probably subjects you just don't know enough about to be on Jeopardy. And, you know, if you've avoided these subjects your whole life, it's probably because you're not that interested in them. You're not really interested in reading a college-level textbook on something like that. But you might get interested in a book that's targeted at a tween, you know, doesn't expect your attention span to be so great. You know, it engages you. It gives you the basic facts, and you often the basics are enough to get by.
You've mentioned...
For me, that category was Shakespeare, by the way.
Yeah, sure.
That you didn't like, or...
Yes. I was a science and math major. I was not an English major.
Yeah. You've mentioned bridge and trivia, poker. Are there other games or that you're into? Are you a board game player?
Yeah, I play board games with friends. I wouldn't say it's like a serious thing. Of course, I play games with my kid a lot, but... Yeah, it's not anything. I've never entered the World Monopoly Championships, which I can't believe are a thing.
That's a horrible game. It is, like, such a horrible
game. He's talking about a coin-flipping contest. That's
And you think it's horrible because?
Well, because A, it takes 4 hours to play, and B, halfway through, you know who's the winner's going to be. Like a good, there's been a renaissance in board games in the last couple of decades, and good board games take 60 to 90 minutes, and you really don't know who the winner's going to be until very near the end of the game.
Would you concur with so it makes a good board game?
I think that all serious board game players agree that Monopoly is not a particularly great one. Although I have a friend back home in Illinois who's really a big board game. I don't know if I'd call him a collector is right, but you know, he's got a whole giant bookshelf full of them, and he has all kinds of editions of Monopoly on there. So there are definitely some people out there who enjoy it. I would not have a world championship of it, though. Like, yeah. Any game where the best player in the world is like a 52-48 favorite over me is not a good game.
My specialty was Scrabble, but memorizing all the 2- and 3-letter words possible, and it's to get good at that game, you have to invest quite a bit of energy, and in my case, it depreciated over the years.
And I was a terrible speller, so Scrabble was never my game. Did you ever delve into card counting?
I kind of read the basics about it, but I've never attempted to make any serious money that way. There's been times where I will just play blackjack out of boredom, and I will reflexively count the deck. But yeah, I don't know that I could even beat the house edge if I tried.
Well, they would only have a 52-48 edge.
Well, yes, and it's not a world championship game, is it?
Now, Mike Sexton, who has been on this show, and Party Poker reached out to you to participate in some poker events at the World Series. How was that? How did that go?
I thought it was a great experience overall. Mike was super nice, you know, as everyone in the poker world knows. He's a great ambassador for the game. It was nice getting to work with him. It was nice getting the experience to play in the World Series. I was able to raise some awareness for a local charity, Project 150, that helps homeless teens, which was nice. You know, we made a pledge to donate half our winnings to them, which was combined $500 for the two events, because we got one bounty in the bounty event. But then Mike and Party Poker donated a combined $10,000 to the charity. And also, there were, you know, a surprising number of autograph hounds lining up behind my table, and they met the director of this charity, and she kind of, you know, nudge, hey, if you you should give us some money. And they, a bunch of people said, hey, okay, you know, we're getting this autograph from this famous guy, let's chip in $100 to the homeless teens. And it was, you know, really great for them, I think.
Oh, that's great. What's the name of the charity?
Project 150.
And is that local to Las Vegas?
Yes, it is. They're kind of reaching out around all of Southern Nevada, but yeah.
Are there other charities that you're supporting?
There's another one I really like, Communities and Schools of Nevada. Their job is basically to make sure that kids stay in school through 12th grade to graduate, you know, and they've raised the graduation rates at the schools that they're at enormously everywhere. You know, they figure out what you need. You know, if you can't wake up on time because you got too much going on in your life, they'll buy you an alarm clock. You know, if you can't afford your school supplies, they'll give you those. They just look at everything. They're working in the classrooms to figure out how to engage the students, you know, just keep them interested long enough to give them a real chance at escaping the cycle of poverty.
Now, Richard and I participate in a improv group. And one of the ladies in the group is this diehard Cleveland Browns fan. When we tell her that you were on our show, but it was not our show where you said that betting on the Cleveland Browns to win the Super Bowl this year is the dumbest bet out there, I don't know if she can forgive you For Kim's sake, are you willing to walk back that answer that you gave to somewhere else?
No. I mean, you know, the Browns, I think, will be a fine team this year, but just...
A fine team, 8-8?
Yeah.
10-6?
There's no reason they can't win 10 games or even 11 games, you know, but it just... here, do a simple exercise. You know, compare the regular season wins market to the odds to win the Super Bowl market. You look at, they have like the Steelers is a 9-win team, the Browns is a 9-win team. You look at the odds to win the Super Bowl, Browns 13-1, Steelers 25-1. You know, how can the Browns possibly be twice as good to win the Super Bowl? It doesn't make any sense, you know.
Why is that? Why?
Well, because
that
seems... people are betting on them. It's supply and demand in the market.
I mean, wow. The job of the odds setters is they notice that everyone's betting on the Browns. They're not going to, you know, give them free money to do it. If there's demand to buy them at 13-1 or whatever it is right now, then that's the price they're going to sell them at.
Yeah, no, I just didn't realize there was that much demand on the Browns.
Yeah, so. Right. And I see this, you know, I'm a Bears fan, but I will say the same effect happens to the Bears. The Bears and the Vikings are in the same division. They both pegged as about 9-win teams. The Vikings are getting twice as long odds to win the Super Bowl. You know, it doesn't make sense. And it means maybe it doesn't necessarily mean you should be betting on the Vikings or the Steelers, but you should not be betting on the Browns or the Bears.
And what sports do you bet other than football?
I will bet on any sport, but I've kind of taken this baseball season off. One thing I used to do every year is, you know, pay really close attention to the baseball futures market and kind of just buy up positions on teams that I thought were undervalued at whatever point in the year. But this year I've been too busy with other stuff to pursue that really. So mostly I would say it's like college football, in-game NFL, and hockey, the three big ones.
In-game NFL. We recently had Ed Miller and Matt Davidow on our show talking about their book, The Logic of Sports Betting. Do you know either or both of those guys?
Yeah, I'm friends with Matt. I know of Ed, but I've never met him.
Yeah, and they're focused on in-game, and they actually said that they're going to release their in-game picks on their website during the regular season. Because their end game is to sell their model to the books as opposed to use it to make money betting, which the way sports betting is exploding, if they can do that, that probably will be worth a lot more money long term than trying to get the money down yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I haven't looked at Matt's model, but knowing how conscientious he is, I'm sure it's quite good. And I don't know what the sportsbooks are paying for this sort of thing, but, you know, I'm sure that there's a big market for that sort of data.
Well, maybe if James Holzhauer recommended this model. So another opportunity, which clearly you don't seem to need. Apparently, opportunities are finding you. You don't need you don't need to find them. All right. We want to thank you very much, James. I was a fan when you're on the show. I'm impressed meeting you. It has been fun for me. Thank you for, you've been on a lot of big name medias, and we're real small fry, and we're very grateful that you took the time to be on our show. Thank you.
It's really nice to be able to pick and choose the projects that, you know, matter to me. Hey, this is a podcast I listen to. You know, I don't watch Good Morning America or whatever. So,
but if they want you to be on Good Morning America, the answer is yes, probably.
Well, it's been no so far, but maybe one day down the road it will be yes. You guys also record in Las Vegas. They record in New York. That's a nicer commute.
Yes, that doesn't vanish. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.